At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey, welcome in. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball. So, as I told you before the playoffs started, the Warriors are going to win it. I said it. You can roll it back and listen. For the finals, I said Warriors in six. I thought there was something symbolic about beating the Celtics in Boston Garden. We didn't really have any sort of incredible close-ending games. We had a bit of a meltdown from Jason Tatum. I think that'd be fair. And the limitation of the Celtics. Steph Curry had a couple of incredible nights. The last two in Boston were remarkable. But I thought the underrated part continues to be the Warriors' defense. When the story of the Warriors is told, it's going to be about Steph and about the three-point shooting, maybe about Draymond and playing small ball. But the truth is that the defense is what decided it. You know, between their consistently getting their hands on basketballs to causing some of these turnovers to forcing Jaylen Brown to use his left hand, their defense was just outstanding. And that's why that cliche works, right? Offense wins games, defense wins championships. That's exactly what happened in the finals. Well, we can kind of go through it. And, you know, I think I was the first guy, both on Fox Sports Radio and on this podcast, to tell you that when Andrew Wiggins was acquired, it was a great fit. You know, when you can be the fourth or fifth guy and just use your athletic ability, and when you get a mismatch, go to work. And then his confidence grew and grew and grew. How about Gary Payton, GP2? What an amazing spirit that guy has, the energy he brought. And when he got in, remember, when they lost in game one, he didn't play. Played in game two. And the rest, as they say, is kind of history. So I thought the better team won. I think Steve Kerr continues to be an amazing coach. And the challenge for the Celtics, we'll talk about it with our guest, Mike Procopio. But I think the Celtics still are probably a ball screen point guard away. That would be my... There's some other... But I think that helps them with Robert Williams as well. Well, let's get into that. Mike Procopio, he has been a scout with the Celtics. He's been... a developmental coach with the Mavericks. And of course, he's worked for years with Tim Grover as his kind of workout guy and guru, as well as had an incredible relationship with Kobe Bryant in prepping Kobe Bryant for so many big games later in his career. Let's catch up with him right now.
How did you just start? What was the, you are synonymous to people who are hoop guys in basketball with a lot of the things you do, the film study, the work you do with draft guys, players, stuff in the NBA, but basketball and you, when did they meet?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, usually with fat Italian guys, we started like 9 years old playing, but, you know, I wasn't very good, but what I did was the smartest thing I did for my career was I was a scorekeeper at this local men's league in my town. And what happens is like all summer, all men's league, it's actually a pretty good league. There was a referee that was involved, had a small involvement with an AAU team called the Boston Amateur Basketball Club, the BABC, that was coached by Leo Papil. And AAU was not a thing back then. I had no idea what it was. I remember being at a summer camp down in Cape Cod at Mass Maritime, and we had a pretty good team. You remember Billy Curley, who was a McDonald's All-American, played at BC Sports? Yeah. So he went to this camp. I went to it. I was like a rising ninth grader, and Billy was like a rising senior. Well, they had this all-star team at camp that had a bunch of good players that played against the BABC, bunch of athletic city kids. I had no idea who they were. There was no internet back then. It was like 1989. And they were ridiculously good. Well, they just had these four letters. They came up in a Cadillac. Leo drove it up a white Cadillac, pulled up with about 12 players in it, and came in and played this game. Well, in the summer league, there was a referee that had the shorts on with BABC. I said, "How'd you get those shorts?" He goes, "Well, I'm sort of in with the team a little bit." And he knew I love basketball. Well, like 4 years later, I was a high school coach. I was entering my freshman year in college. And he goes, "Hey, this guy's looking for somebody to help out, keep score, you know, maybe coach a little bit. Would you be interested?" I said, "Yeah, hell yeah, I'd be interested." So I met Leo, you know, who, if anyone doesn't know who Leo Papil is, he's probably the most famous, you know, amateur coach in Massachusetts history as far as, you know, not high school coach, but like AU coach, amateur, things like that. And we just struck up this relationship. They had this team that would go to Vegas, and when Vegas was actually good with 64 teams in it, they won it like 2 years in a row and, you know, lost the buzzer or whatever year three.
You're underselling it. Okay. Sure. So there used to be Vegas, then Phoenix.
Yeah. BCI, right?
There was Long Beach,
yep,
which was Izzy Washington.
Yep.
There was Vegas, which was, yep, the Nike National Championship.
Yep.
And then there was Phoenix.
Yes.
And no one except for BABC was Scoony Penn and Eggy McCray.
And Chris Heron and Randall Jackson.
Ever won both. And yep, they won both.
They run both.
That,
yep,
was the only team to ever win both. And that was, it was like winning the NCAA and the NIT. That's what it was like.
Doug, I don't think anyone understands because AAU is so bad these days for the most part, unless you go like EYBL or what have you. Like, these teams were stacked with players. And I would always ask Leo, I said, "Leo, we're running these tournaments. We've got like seven McDonald's All-Americans in the tournament. You know, we invite Riverside Church, Gauchos, Tennessee Travelers, all this stuff. And no one comes to the games." And now you get it, Doug. You watch these clips of like 5,000 people at these games with like decent talent. But like, it was unbelievable to me that we couldn't get anybody coming to these games. But anyways, that's how I started. And what happened was, like, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I didn't know if I wanted to like try to be a head coach someday, high school coach. Look, I thought I was going to work at a bank in my town in Revere and be the JV coach and maybe varsity coach, and that was it. Well, yeah, I start traveling around a little bit with these guys, and I only traveled locally, and then I would work like 12 weeks of camp during the summer, Eastern Invitational, Nike All-American Camp, and I would just sort of try to learn as much as I could But like what happened was there's no trainers around, thankfully. And what I would do is all our guys would come back for the summer when they would go to college. I'd come and work them out a little bit. Had no idea what I was doing. But we like Scootie Penn and, you know, Chris Heron and Eggie McRae and those guys. And I would just sort of work them out whenever I could. And yeah, what happened there was we ended up being one of the first Nike team sponsored. And I ended up going to Nike All-American Camp. I met George Raveling. And that's just sort of how I started coming in with the workout stuff a little bit more. And yeah, it's been pretty cool experience ever since.
So in these workouts, the early days of workouts, how'd you put it together? How'd you decide what you were going to do?
Well, there's one of my best friends, a guy named Dave Hopla. And I'm sure you know Dave, best shooting coach in the world. He used to go to this camp in the Cape. And when I was a young kid, and he used to like just have these lectures, I started befriending Dave, and I would go to his workouts. I would go to the Poconos, Pocono Invitational Camp. He would speak and do a little more teaching in his own camp. And I would just sort of just at 6 a.m., he would have these early bird workouts. I would literally just have a notebook and just start writing down stuff that he would do. And I would just sort of emulate what he did. And then that's sort of how I got my start in it. Now, when I was at Nike camp, I met a gentleman named Herb Livesey and Tate Slott, two guys synonymous with player development. Herb was the director of player development of CBA at the time. And Tate's was, I think, just left Indiana State. And they both started working out the college counselors at Nike. Tim Duncan, Vince Carter, Nick Collison, just you name it, they had it. And I would just watch these workouts and I had no idea what I was doing. I just watched and took notes. And the big part of my development as a workout guy is basically just being at these workouts at Nike. And then also in 1997, Rick Pitino gets the head job in the presidency of the Boston Celtics. He hires Leo Papil, and I was able to sit in on Rick's pregame pre-draft workouts with, like, you know, with Van Horn and McGrady and all these guys that they would come in and work out. And that was, those two things had probably the biggest impact on me as far as a teacher and an individual workout coach, and watching those three guys at work doing their craft in sort of separate venues. So it was amazing. It was amazing.
Let's start with Hopla. Okay. Yep. So he's an amazing shooting coach. He can sit there and talk while he's making like 95, you know.
He shoots his body temperature 98.6. That's yes. What he shoots. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Right.
But in terms of having it resonate with kids, like what are the teaching points that you're able to take from that and put into practice?
So Dave was very simplistic. What happened, Doug, and I'm sure you've done it watching camp and watching lectures, like there's two types of shooting coaches. There's one guy who knows what he's doing, and there's the other that's full of shit. Like they'll usually, I'm sorry, apologize for swearing, but
you can swear. There's a pod. You can say whatever.
Thankfully. So there's the guys that actually know what they're doing, and then there's the full of shit guys that want to talk about science, angles, and all this other stuff.
Oh, Dave, my goodness. Like
they're,
what?
They're robbing money. They're completely robbing money.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And Dave would just be simple. Dave would be like, look, split your body in half. It's a shot line. The ball, your hand, and your foot, your shooting foot, should all line up. And you need to, you know, you need to have a wrinkle in your wrist. You need to keep the ball straight. Obviously, see the little bit of daylight on your, get the ball off your palm. And you want to shoot the ball straight. You want to shoot the ball with power. And you want to bring it with your elbow to your eyebrow on the follow through and freeze your follow through. So it's such an easy, not easy because it's really tough to do, but like it's a very easy concept. Then you listen to these guys that put you to sleep. It's like reading stereo instructions from Radio Shack back in the 80s. Like you don't understand what their concepts are, and they're just completely full of shit. Dave, from second one, A, he could shoot it. B, he could talk it. C, he could teach it. And it was just so simple how his approach was. And that's how I sort of developed my mantra of being dominating simple, is listening to guys like Dave speak and teach, where everybody else just seemed like, what are you doing, man? Like, you know, yeah. So that's sort of how it resonated.
It's interesting. And we'll circle back. We're going to get back to all of these things,
sure.
But I feel like that's like, I started back up a youth program.
I saw that. Yeah.
And then as part of it, like I have parents like, hey, would you come work out my kids? So I come and they're like, wow, you're very like fundamental and basic. And I was like,
yeah,
like do like all of the ball handling stuff. I get it, yeah. But I don't get it. It's, yeah. You know, it's like, it's still a game of being able to catch on balance.
Yep.
You know, when you get in the lane, you're playing off 2 feet, mm-hmm. You know, and I mean, some of the stuff is so bizarre. You have guys doing
Doug
that I don't, and the Instagram makes it worse, you know, right?
The worst,
because you have these guys that, you know, they're like, I'm watching it. I'm probably watching with you and cringing inside.
Yes.
Like you'll have kids following thinking like, this is how it's supposed to look.
Yes.
You know,
mm-hmm. I agree.
When that's not like, first of all, basketball, 95% of the time is played without the ball. Mm-hmm. None of that is taught. Mm-hmm. And then with the basketball, like it's just too much. I have kids that are really talented that you get to where they were the workout guy, and it takes you half of a tournament to get them to stop dribbling so much because everything has to be, you know, 15 different moves.
Doug, I tech this summer, especially this spring, I've got a new thing that I talked to players about. I said, look, including me, if anyone ever tries to teach you anything, you ask two questions. And if they can't answer these two questions, walk the fuck out of the gym. When am I going to do this in a game? And how is the defender, if it's an offensive drill or offensive move, how is the offensive player going to react to this? So then I have a counter to it. If they can't answer those two questions like that, to walk the fuck out of the gym, because that guy or girl that's working you out is completely full of shit and they don't know what they're doing. Yeah.
Right. 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 It's like, you know, I mean, and again, I want to get into the Steph Curry thing because Steph is, I think this is me personally. I think there's parts of the game that he's expanded mm-hmm. that are really good for it. Mm-hmm. But I don't necessarily believe that many people who talk about it on TV or radio have any idea of the things that he does that are different. They yeah. just think he shoots deep threes
yeah.
and that's what makes him different. To me, I was always taught to never shoot off a crossover or when you switch hands, mm-hmm. ever, mm-hmm. right? It's just too hard in terms of balance.
Tough shot. Yep.
Right. But he's kind of figured it out. Mm-hmm. And there's some parts to it. And I think Damian Lillard as well, because I think Phil does a good job as well, yep. where the sidestep where you pound it and you're able to get balance. And what that's done is, you know, back when, again, you're talking about these days in the 90s, the step back was the Kiki move, right? It was the Kiki Vandeweghe.
It was Kiki Vandeweghe.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you're right, you could right-handed, it was really hard to do it going right. It was easier to do it going left, right?
Yes.
And so what Lillard has done and through Phil is that hard dribble to your right. And it's like, and you can do it off the dribble as well, mm-hmm. where it's like it's a sidestep instead of a step back, but it's mm-hmm. the ability to still have that balance, even going to your strong hand.
Yeah.
So I think there's part of the expansion of the game, which is really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the new kind of extra step that guys are getting as they gather on that step back or Luka's step back, which is different. Like all of those things are good. It's the way in which we're teaching kids that everything is downhill, mm-hmm. everything's with the ball, and everything, by my estimation, is way, way too many moves, which you can't actually shoot off of and shoot a good percentage off.
No, and I think that everyone sort of has to take a breath on this. And look, they won't because it's, and I'll get back to this, but like if you watch the NBA playoffs, which in my opinion is the best basketball ever to watch, not during the regular season, but the playoffs. And just watch the shots that players get at your position and watch what and pay attention to what you work on and say, wait a minute, does this add up? Because most of the game on the wing and perimeter is catch and shoot. Then it's the straight line drive finish. Then it's the 1-2 dribble pull up. Then it's the pick and roll read. Then it's the coming out pin downs. Like the isolation part of it. And when I would work with Kobe and I work with Enrique Gumbawale from the WNBA, like when I advise and I talk to these players that are really good, I'm like, look, in the flow of the game with the shot clock, from 24 to 8. Try to get as many uncontested, marginally contested shots as you can get. Great shots. On 7 and under, use your gut. If you want to go into your bag of tricks, go right ahead. It's probably going to be a bad shot. Most of the shots are going to be tough shots under 7 shot clock. That's what you're going to get, and that's okay. But when we're teaching this is all the game is, you're absolutely wrong. It's not. It's very basic. And these trainers and these, you know, not all of them are bad, obviously. We talked about that. But when you're only teaching that, I've seen these workouts. I've been in California for 3 months. I just got back. And I watch these workouts that are 90 minutes to 120 minutes of like last second shot attempts. And that's all you're teaching. It's a problem. And the other problem with that is if you're going to teach the isolation stuff, don't just say this move is the best move ever, right? And then you get off that move the next day and you teach another move like that. You got to build on something. Work on that one move every day. Yeah.
Move. Counter move.
And work on it every day. Those two things.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Rain or shine, every day is a great day for fishing, right? You got rain gear, but you can't overlook sunny day gear. A Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie has you covered on the sunniest days. Like, literally. I mean, who wouldn't trade a sunburn for a trophy fish? But why do it if you don't have to? Especially when this Solar Stream Elite hoodie is built with broad-spectrum UV protection. We're talking UPF 50. And it has airflow so you don't overheat. And what's the alternative? Putting down the rod every half hour so you can slather on some sunscreen. Seems like an easy choice to me. Columbia PFG has you covered with their Castback TC shoe. Its OmniMax cushioning and traction system helps if you're on your feet a lot, say, fighting a fish. Not to mention keeping you sure-footed on a wet rocking boat. So if you're going to be spending long days out on the water, and I sincerely hope that you will be, head over to Columbia.com/PFG and shop all their performance fishing gear.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
So, yeah, so it's interesting that you took notes and you put things together from different people because, it's a lot of been trial and error. Mm-hmm. And in watching the playoffs, one of the things that I believe is that the Warriors, the way they play with off ball movement.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of a almost a new way of a throwback to sort of blocker mover, right? Mm-hmm. Where you have mm-hmm. designated screeners and designated movers. Mm-hmm. I think that's it'll still be effective at times in college, but mm-hmm. I don't think we'll ever see that in the NBA ever again. And this is a hypothesis, not a theory. Okay. The hypothesis is this. You have two unique stars in Clay mm-hmm. and Steph. Okay. They're raised by NBA guys. So mm-hmm. they were guys that were around the game back when it was played more this way. So they were taught at a very early age about off the ball movement. Additionally, mm-hmm. they played in college for two master coaches of motion offenses, and they played for that school for 3 years each. Right. Mm-hmm. So you have the teaching coming up, the teaching in college, right? And neither are spectacular athletes. So in order to get space, in order to catch and shoot, you have to be able to, it's almost, you know, necessity is the root of all invention, right?
Oh, wow. So, that's a big one. Yeah.
Right. So like, look, Clay wasn't like Clay. Here's Clay's real background. He played for my dad. And in the summer he played, and then in the summer, the big tournaments, he'd leave, he'd play for the Pumps, and he'd get really frustrated and pout. And so Clay had a reputation of being a powder.
Yeah.
Nobody wanted him because he was soft. He was a powder. Well, really mm-hmm. it was like, here's a guy who can't play with the ball in his hands going one-on-one to shoot. He's mm-hmm. got to play off of movement. And yet the bigger teams he play on is just five out or high ball screen and go. It mm-hmm. didn't fit him and he wouldn't get shots and he'd get really, really frustrated. Right.
Right.
So you have these two guys, and then you factor in their mentality and personality is not like most guys that are stars. They actually mm-hmm. root for each other, cheer for each other, don't mind. And then you have a coach in Steve Kerr, who also came from that same mindset going back to his days at Arizona. Oof, yeah. And a guy who needed a screen or needed to play off of Michael Jordan or Tim Duncan in order to get shots. So he understood it as well and put them in a system that all kind of works together. Mm-hmm. I don't think you're going to see that anymore. And look, you work with these guys, mm-hmm. but the Tatums of the world, the Jaylen Browns of the world, that's what this generation all looks like. They're all from, you know, 6'2", 6'3" to 6'7", 6'8", but they're all brought up in, have the ball in your hands. We're going to play downhill. We're going to get you into a ball screen and play off action. And then shooters, all they do is exchange on the weak side, right? Or you're mm-hmm. just finding ways to space. You're not really reading a screen. You're not curling. You're not back cutting. You're not flaring, unless it's a design set that tells you to do it. But really, it comes down to end of the day, we want you, somebody coming off a downhill ball screen, right? Mm-hmm. So I really feel like this is the last we'll see of it, right? Even Luka, like mm-hmm. Luka's unbelievable, but all with the ball in his hands, right? So will we, in your mind, do you think it's the last of this sort of style of basketball, or will it soon be replicated because people see its success?
Well, I think, Doug, just like any other thing in basketball, if you're a competitor, you know, Luka is probably the most competitive guy besides Steph that's in the top 5 to 10 players in the league. I think what happens is if a competitor, because being with Kobe as much as I was, just being able to learn from him, when a competitor sees something in their way from success, if they can't get to the next level of winning, especially that Luka's all about winning and Steph's all about winning, when they see a roadblock and they say, well, I'm playing this way, but there's a roadblock with it. I got to expand my game and I got to change. And I've got to. Yes, I understand that.
But, like, you know how hard it is for guys that play with the ball in their hands to play without the ball in their hands?
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. But that's the only way, Doug. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but that's the only way. Like, if Luka knows that he can't win a championship playing a certain style that he plays, I'm going to gamble that he's probably going to fight it. But he might. Now, that's the only way it's going to change the game, Doug. I'll tell you why. Because Luka, Steph is not on his way out, but Steph's on the decline. In a sense. On a decline where, like, he'll play for 5-6 more years, maybe. Maybe not. Luka's the sort of next up-and-coming star.
Yes.
Giannis, next and up-and-coming star, which they already start. And if they see those guys, because everybody emulates stars, nobody wants to emulate. Nobody wants to be Hersey Hawkins anymore. Nobody wants to be the role player that he's my favorite NBA player of all time.
That's a great call.
I love Hersey.
And Hawkins was amazing.
Yeah, no question. And nobody wants to be that guy anymore, because if that guy could make Hersey Hawkins could make $185 million in his career now by just doing those things. Everybody wants to emulate stars. Now, stars emulating stars, that's fine. But when you get role players emulating stars, could be a problem, because A, they can't live their life like that. As far as on the court, they can't live a steady diet of tough shots. If you get all these stars playing a different type of way, then you might see a shift. That's the only way it's going to happen. And I mean, who doesn't play with Giannis plays a little bit without the ball. Luka needs the ball. You know, Steph needs the ball. Steph actually doesn't need the ball. But like, all these players need the ball in their hand. Jason Tatum needs the ball in his hand. But I think Jason's going to find out he cannot win playing the way he plays for 40 minutes a night. He can play that way and win and be really good 26 of those minutes, but he's got to be able to play off the ball, and he's got to be able to emulate that a little bit and add that to his game, as well as the defensive package, or he's not going to win.
Okay. So you start with Hopla. There's three guys.
Yeah.
Three guys.
Yep.
Who are the other two?
Herb Livesey and Tate's Lock.
So Tate's Lock and Herb Livesey.
Yeah.
I was a camper at a camp called Snow Valley.
Snow Valley, Santa Barbara.
Which still exists. Eh. They don't run it anymore. Well, the one in Iowa is very well done.
Yep.
But it still exists. But Snow Valley was the first day and a half you had no basketball.
No basketball.
I sent my AAU kids there last year.
Okay.
And they're all like,
yeah, get me out of here. Yeah. Get me out of here. Yeah.
They hated it. But it's like the best thing for them. And I'll be honest, like, there were some parts of it I didn't like. Mm-hmm. I love cutthroat and things like that. Tate Slock was a master coach who really Bob Knight actually learned from, right? That's how
he hired Bob Knight. Yeah.
Right. That's how well-respected Tate Slock was. Mm-hmm. And for people who don't know, he wrote a famous book about his time at head coach at Clemson and about all the cheating they were doing. Mm-hmm. It was like a come clean book. Mm-hmm. And he became unhireable because he told the truth, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So what'd you learn from Tate Slock?
How to talk to players. A presence. Of just like, yeah, he was fiery and he was a Bobby Knight type of yeller, but he could comment, he could talk, and he could teach with simplicity. And you look him in the eyes, he was like what James Caan in that movie with Tom Cruise when he was the race car driver, the Indy car driver.
Days of Thunder. Days of Thunder, yeah.
Like that calming, like, West Virginian sort of drink. That wasn't moonshine. James Caan. What's up?
That wasn't James Caan, that movie. I know
Tom
exactly.
Hagen. Robert Duvall. Yeah. My bad. Robert Duvall, and like how he was like, he could be fiery, but he could look you in the eye and just see through you, and he could talk to you, and he could relate, and he could just sort of give you that 20-second soundbite that would change your whole approach to what you were doing at that time. And he could really teach, and he was simple, and he was simplistic, but he could get on your ass. And like, we had all these All-American college kids that were like, look, Doug, like in those camps, in the Nike All-American, you had like 180 really high major high school kids. Then they had these 35 to 40 college players that would be doing these drill stations. Like while the kids were at class or the kids were at lunch, these guys would be working out. It was like I told you, Tim Duncan, Vince Carter. We had Emeka Okafor, Luke Ridnour, Luke Jackson. I mean, you name David West, you name the guys that we had it. And we would just be working these guys out individually, and then game break, like stopping games, teaching, correcting. It was like USA basketball trials in the 80s. Like, we had all these guys, like, they had very little ego. If they did, they would send them home. It wasn't it wasn't like now where it's all player empowerment and you have to just have gloves off.
Honestly, it's amazing. So here's let me back you up with a story.
Sure, please do.
So I think it was 95, maybe it was 96. I think it was 95. I got invited to the, was it the under 18 national trials, right? And so I go to Colorado Springs and Tim Duncan was there and he was freshman or a sophomore, but he was young.
Yeah.
So he was only like 18 as a freshman or whatever. So he could have played on the under 18, but they had him playing with the 21s. But it was intermingled with all the drills. And then when you get to playing, they break you into two groups. Mm-hmm. And I remember I think it was Albert White and the late Tractor Trailer.
Tractor Trailer, yep.
And who I played against Tractor Trailer at ABCD, and he had an incredible personality.
Oh yeah,
he was like the greatest dude, and I'd never seen somebody like that. Like I grew up, my dad always got great players to play with on our teams, but I'd never seen a dude who was like 6'5", 6'6", 300 pounds that could just explode and dunk on. He was kind of Zion before Zion a little bit, maybe not as explosive. But they showed up late, like the second day to a workout. And I think they got caught drinking or something. It was just something very, very minor.
Right.
But like, I remember like all of a sudden they were late and then they were gone. And I was like, what happened? Like, they sent them home. And no one does that anymore. Oh. No one gets sent home anymore.
Nobody sits players anymore and nobody sends them.
And there was also, no like handlers there.
No,
it was just the USA, you know, it was just the George Raveley, the John Thompsons, the Mike Krzyzewskis, just the coaches, the USA basketball personnel and nothing else. No media, no nothing else. That's and true. It was amazing. And then you kind of fast forward to now. Mm-hmm. And I love when anybody asks me, Dinos Trigonis has me do Pangos. Sometimes I'll coach there, whatever.
Yeah.
But it's just the like.
It's different.
It's so different.
Yeah.
And we're creating an environment where this is the normal for kids. And it's really on us because we won't put our foot down. We won't, you know, charge a parent. We won't tell somebody, hey, you just got to send the kid or maybe a parent or guardian. Mm-hmm. And that's it. You can't send handler and they can't have six kids or whatever. Anyway. Okay. So how did you come to meet Kobe? How did the Kobe intersection happen?
Okay, so fast forward to 97.
And you don't have to skip a bunch because if it's a long story, that's the idea of a pod.
Yeah. No. That's great. So 97, Leo Papil was my guy. Like Leo Papil still is today. Like I emulate a lot of what he does. I love the way he speaks to kids. I love the fact that he doesn't pull any punches. And so he gets hired by Patino. And I'm a senior at Suffolk University. I was a manager. I was a high school coach. It was a Division III school in Boston. And Rick gets hired, and basically he hires Leo as his head scout. Leo worked with Rick at BU, you know. And I think Rick Pitino. Side story: I think Rick Pitino is one of the best coaches of all time.
What if I told you this? Okay, this is my Rick Pitino thing.
Yeah.
Okay? I think he's the greatest modern day basketball coach there is.
There you go.
Okay. Well, you kind of soft. So do you think, I think he's one of the
Well,
best.
I did because I don't want to have this fucking back and forth about it, but yeah.
Why can't we have back and forth about it? That's what basketball people do.
That's right? A good point. He's the best coach of all time.
What we don't do is we don't do the like, oh, he's sixth on the list.
No.
11th on the list. That's bullshit.
Bullshit.
Here's my thing with Patino.
And I'll tell you mine after yours.
Okay. He was ahead on conditioning way before anybody else.
Right.
Okay. Right. Like he was a fanatic about it. And honestly, like if I look back, like what he did with Billy Donovan, having him lose all that weight and running the piss out of those dudes. Like I played like 184 to 187 in college. I was too strong. I should have been playing in the 170s.
Right.
And I moved well, would move better. But he was ahead on he was the first dude on conditioning.
Yep.
Okay. He was the first to really embrace the 3-point shot before anybody else. The one who understood the math to it, understood the value to it, also understood on some level small ball, right? Mm-hmm. And that they played smaller. than other guys. The pressure defense, like, did it ultimately work with the Knicks? Yes and no. Like, considering his roster, it really worked. I don't know if it works, you know, at the top of the NBA over, you know, in the NBA playoffs, if those bodies can, but it obviously worked in college and dominated. Mm-hmm. He was ahead of the game in tanking, right? Mm-hmm. When he was in Boston and they tanked and they had those two picks, mm-hmm. they didn't get Tim Duncan, right? It forever changed history.
Well, he got hired. He got hired after the tanking. ML Carr actually has to give credit for that tanking.
They know that. Yeah. I did not know that.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yep.
He's been ahead of the game on scouting. He changed offensively. When he was at Kentucky and they won those back-to-back titles, they were running a version of Carolina Shuffle. Yep. Right. And then he changed and he ran at Louisville. He ran some pistol. So the point is, like, a lot of these things that people are doing are all portions of what he did. Plus, he's a masterful game coach and understanding the actually watching the game. Whereas I will, without naming names, I'll be critical of some college coaches mm-hmm. where they just do what they do. Mm-hmm. And if you question it, you say, this is what I've always done. It always works.
Yeah.
If it doesn't work, it's because you're not doing what we're supposed to be doing.
Right.
Right. Which I get, but there's also, you have to have played and have feel, and he has incredible feel for the game. Mm-hmm. His matchup zone was spectacular, and he's literally won everywhere. They didn't win big with the Celtics. Okay. But Providence, Final Four.
Yeah.
Kentucky, that thing would have won more games than anybody. Hell, he won a national championship at Louisville. That was not easy.
Nope.
They did it. Won in Greece. They mm-hmm. won everywhere. Yeah. So what else am I missing in terms of
that's what he does. Like take no disrespect to Mike Krzyzewski and stuff. Like Mike, I would like, I'll get off Krzyzewski on it, but like,
no, you get on Krzyzewski.
He's won everywhere he's been at fucking shit places. BU, he wins 20 games more than twice. He wins 19. Like, BU is one of the worst programs in the country. Then he goes to.
They went to the NIT. Yeah. Anyway, just go ahead.
Yeah. And then he goes to the Knicks as an assistant. He comes back to Providence, which is the worst program in the Big East. Goes to a Final Four.
But wait, he didn't just go to Providence. That was when the Big East had 8 teams.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And the league had put 3 teams in a Final Four.
Yeah.
So it's not just you're taking over the worst job in the league.
Yeah.
You're taking over the worst job.
In the best conference in the country.
Obviously the best conference in the country that only has 8 teams.
Yes. And he goes to Final Four in 2 years.
Yes.
I mean, and he took, like, Jake, what was it?
Also took transfers.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Took transfers for everybody else.
Takes those guys Final Four. And then he goes to the Knicks. Does well with the Knicks. Elevates them. Yes. Goes to Kentucky. Now it's Kentucky, but they were in the death penalty when he took them. Fucking takes them to new heights. Then he goes to the Celtics, and he should have never been a GM. Should have definitely coached. I think he would have been fine. He probably shouldn't have gone to Kentucky. I mean, to the Celtics. But he goes, and look, they were competitive his first year, and then they fell off. I think, yeah, the style.
When did Reggie Lewis die?
Reggie Lewis died, I think, like 93, 94. So that was 3 years removed. Now, ML Carr did 2 great things when he was in Boston. A, he tanked to get those picks. And right. B, they traded Eric Montrose. And I'm almost positive it is. I got to look it up. He traded Eric Montrose to the Dallas Mavericks for a future first round pick that ended up being Antoine Walker. So he ends up doing that. And then, like, when he was with the Celtics, they had Dirk Nowitzki wired up to draft like that in 98. He has him wired up to draft Nowitzki. And Donnie Nelson ends up being an assistant coach on that Nike team that so he's an assistant coach. His dad knows all those guys in Europe. And then they ended up getting that trading for tractor trailer, basically. They swap picks with Milwaukee to get Dirk. And then ahead of Boston, but that would have, And that would have been funny because I think he would have run Dirk Nowitzki off early. I think that because Dirk took some time to develop.
Sure.
And that's the problem with Pitino. He just didn't have patience.
Yeah, no, he got rid of Chauncey in the middle of his first year.
Yeah. Now they did some good things. They have like Bruce Bowen, they got him, but like now the rumor has it that they were gonna get Tracy McGrady in that 97 draft. They were gonna draft Billups and then draft McGrady. And he had, for what I was told, he had a sort of a thing for Tracy because Tracy decommitted from Kentucky throughout his recruitment. And I've heard that from good sources that he said, no, we can't have that. Fuck that. Blah, blah, blah. So they ended up doing Ron Mercer, which,
that's the mistake that these guys all make. They get the guys that they do the same thing with players at times in the NBA that they did with coaching staffs, where they get guys that they know. Right. I think he brought in Dan Cross to be his point guard with the Atlanta Hawks, right?
That
was hard enough.
Yeah.
You can't bring in Dan Cross. He wasn't.
No. I thought he would bring in Dimitri Hill, to be honest with you, but he didn't do it. And Shinsis, but no. But so I was around. So this happens. And again, that's why I think Rick's the best of all time, because he could take these shit programs and elevate them up. Of course, Kentucky and Louisville aren't shit programs. But then he takes Louisville, which was running them into the ground by the time he took it. Denny Crum just sort of was checked out. He takes them and he has success there. He goes to Greece, Panathinaikos, which, they didn't have success. He elevates them. And then he goes to Iona and they win fucking 25 games in his second year. Pretty great things. But anyways, so he gets hired. And my guy Leo goes, Mike, I'm going to get you hired here. I don't know what capacity I'm going to get you hired. So Pitino hires about 5,000 fucking people. I wasn't about to be 5,001, but we go to some Italian restaurant in Boston. And like right after he takes the job, this was like May, because I was about to go to the Bob Gibbons Memorial Day Classic. And I was about to fly out to that. And I had dinner in the North End with like Jim O'Brien, Leo, Rick, and a bunch of other people. And he offers me his driver's job. I'm supposed to be the fucking guy's driver. And now, Rick Pitino was my fucking idol. So it's like, whatever the fuck this guy wanted to do, I was going to do it. So I was like, yeah, Rick. He goes, Mike, look, you're not going to do any basketball stuff. You'll be driving me around. You'll be with me every day. I'm like, I'm a fucking college kid about to graduate, 22 years old. I'm like, yeah, fuck it. Let's do it. And like, just like most Pitino things, it started out good, but I never got the job. He hires the guy that followed him to Louisville that he ended up like sleeping with that guy's wife. Remember that before? Thankfully I didn't have to go through any of that. So I didn't get that. So anyways, so now I'm just like working out, going to Nike camp, doing 10 camps a year, working with Leo, working out local high school, college guys, because no one does it. So I'm doing that and I'm learning. And then like I get hired by the Celtics when Pitino left. Chris Wallace was the GM. Leo was still working for the team. New ownership takes over the Celtics and they need a guy for the new ownership. They want to expand their scouting staff because they only had like three guys in their whole front office. So they want to expand it. They want to bring me in as a low level scout, basketball operations guy, but also they just traded for Vin Baker. So I meet with Chris and I meet with Leo, goes, Mike, look. And, he goes, look, we got this guy. We don't know. He's got some questionable off the court stuff. Can you live with the guy? Which fucking is millions of dollars of fines these days. But he goes, can you live with him? Just be a positive influence, talk hoop with him.
With who?
Vin Baker. So they trade for Vin Baker. So I move in with fucking Vin Baker before I officially join the Celtics. So like I'm living with him, fucking just sort of like trying to be a positive influence. He's doing whatever he's doing. And I'm like,
all right. Did you know at the time he was drinking that much?
I didn't. I was in his house. I lived in his house. I had no idea he was drinking. Now, I knew he had jugs of fucking Listerine around, which I guess they found out after he was drinking that for the alcohol. And I think he wrote it in his book that he was drinking Listerine for the small amount of alcohol. Fucking nuts.
Did you ever hear the story of supposedly and of how he many people think he became an alcoholic?
No, please share.
So he goes to Seattle. Yep. He gets drafted by Seattle, right?
Oh, yes, I do know
this. Okay, so Dan, tell me if this is what you heard. And they basically said, like, hey, Gary, take him under your wing. Gary Payton, mm-hmm. take mm-hmm. him under your wing. And they told Vin, you do what Gary does.
Yes.
Gary's a Hall of Famer. You do what Gary does. Well, to those of us who know Gary Payton, like Gary Payton has, he's one of those rare cats that can go out, put down his last beer.
5 a.m.
Okay, yeah. Go to shoot around.
Yeah. And bust your ass.
Okay. Then go back, sleep all day.
Yeah.
And then take a nap. Basically sleep all day. Get up, have something to eat. Go to the gym. You know, give you 20 and 10 or whatever. Yeah. Be a Hall of Famer. Go out at night.
Yeah.
Do it again.
That's right? Exactly right. That's exactly right.
And other part with Gary is, and this is, I have another friend who is a teammate of his who said, Gary, in an effort to prove he wasn't an alcoholic, but also to change it up, he would be on a different liquor every year.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So 1 year he'd be on Hennessy. Yeah. 1 year he'd be on Cavassier. it was something different every year. But that Gary's like legendary for, like, some dudes just can do that.
Yeah.
You know, can do it. Some dudes had to be in bed at 10 at night and have milk and cookies and tuck in night, night, bye bye. Right. Yeah. And eat well in order to perform at their best. Vin, like, it unleashed those genes where he became an addict and he just drank. So you're living with him.
Living with him before I officially joined the Celtics, because the new ownership group, even though he bought the team in October, doesn't take the team over till February. So the new ownership group that's there now. So I'm just living with him, going in, like breaking down European tapes and stuff. That was like the Darko Milicic draft. So I'm like doing both. And then they hire me officially in February. Danny Ainge takes over in like April of that year. And then he takes over the reins of the team. So I'm working for the team. In the summer, Dave Hopla runs these college camps, these college shooting camps in Chicago and Philly. He goes, Mike, do you want to work them? Which I think was illegal if, you know, because they were still college guys. I'm like, fuck it. Yeah, I'll work it. So I'm in Chicago. We did it for a couple of straight years in Tim Grover's gym, in Hoops the Gym. And I always wanted to work for Tim. My best fucking, like, that's the guy I wanted to work for, because Tim, no one was doing it. He was working with NBA players in the offseason. Obviously, you read about what he did with Michael, but he was working out with like Michael Finley, Juwan Howard, you know, I mean, guys like that, just Elton Brand, you know, Bobby Simmons, like had a million guys in Chicago. And I wanted to do that. So we're working out. He wouldn't give me the time of fucking day. Like, always wanted to talk to Tim. If anyone knows Tim, he's not the easiest guy to talk to right off the bat. So I'm trying to talk to him. Nothing. So Antoine Walker had a charity game in Chicago where he would bring in all these NBA guys and play at the United Center. So we had this camp where we'd work out the guys like in the morning, a couple hours off, work them out in the afternoon, and we're done. So in between sessions, I'm walking out of Grover's gym. Paul Pierce is walking in, and I'm already with the Celtics at the time for like a year. He goes, Mike, you want to work me out real quick? I'm like, well, you know, I'm going to have lunch real quick, Paul. I'll come back and get you. He goes, that's fine. I'm going to work out with Grover and the weights, and then, you know, we can work out later. So I'm like, yeah, fuck it. I'll do it. So I go there. We grab lunch. I come back. I work out Paul Pierce. And then Tim Grover comes down and starts watching. I'm like, oh, this fucking guy, you know, like, he's probably making fun of me. Fuck that guy, blah, blah, blah. So I work him up for like an hour and a half. And because I'm a fucking grotesque human being. I'm like Uncle Fester on steroids. Like, no bald, white, fat guy should be working on NBA guys and them sort of do whatever. So I walk off the court. I'm done. And he goes, hey, you got a minute? And I go, yeah, for sure. He goes, what do you do? I go, well, I work for the Celtics. I'm sort of like a low-level scout. He goes, I want you to work for me. I've never seen a guy look like you put an NBA All-Star through a workout. I want to fucking hire you. I said, Tim, I'd love to, but I work for the Celtics. He goes, well, how about we do this? How about you work for them? You talk to Danny, work with him for 9 months, and then you work with me from like July 1 to October 1, and then you can do back and forth. And I know like Tim Gergerich and those guys were doing that with Portland at the time, where he could sort of fluctuate his deal. I said, fuck it, let me ask. So I go back, I ask Danny Ainge. He goes, yeah, hell yeah, you better do that. Like, that's a great opportunity. So I'm like, great. So I ended up working for Tim and running all his basketball workouts with Michael Finley, Juwan Howard, Sean Livingston, Dwayne Wade, you know, Andre Iguodala, all those guys. And I'd run all his basketball. A couple of years later, Ainge said, look, the NBA is cracking down on this. You got to either pick Grover, you got to pick us. Whatever you want to do is fine. This is like 06. I was like, I'm going to pick Grover because, you know, this is what I want to do. I love scouting. Don't get me wrong, but this is what I want to do. And Boston was my hometown, but like the opportunity to work for Tim. Tim was my favorite boss and best boss of all time. So I ended up working for Tim for like 10 years running his basketball. Anyways, fast forward. It's like 08, 09. 07, actually. Kobe does his skill academy out in Mater Dei, is first and only one. And he goes, Mike, I'm going to set you up to work out Kobe. I said, you know, you want to do that? I'm like, yeah, fuck yeah, I want to do that. So I ended up working out Kobe. I get
where?
A call. Yeah. Actually, UC Irvine.
UCI is where you used to. At Bren or at Crawford Hall? In the arena or the one with the with the stage in it?
The one with the stage in it. The one with the small.
So I don't know if you know that. They used to play there.
No shit.
Dude, and they had dudes. Johnny Rod, legend.
Yeah.
Todd Thornton. Scotty Brooks came in right when they started playing the Bren Center.
How about Ben McDonald? How about, you know, they had Ben McDonald play in the league.
Kevin McGee.
Yeah.
Kevin McGee is a, you know, retired jersey overseas, whatever. They used to have dudes.
Yes.
Dude. And they played up, they played fast, but they played that little tiny Crawford Hall.
I fucking love that. I love those small gyms. So the guy goes, hey, Mike, car's going to pick you up at 4:30, like 4 o'clock, whatever. I go, yeah, it's great. You got dinner that night. That's awesome. He goes, no, motherfucker. He goes, the gym is 4 a.m. I'm like, yeah, fuck it. I'm like, now I'm shitting my pants because I've worked out players, right? I've worked out like good NBA players, but I've never worked out that fucking guy. And he scared the shit out of me. And I was like, all right, fuck it. Let's do it. So him and Chase Buttinger were there because Palinka was recruiting Buttinger. He was a college counselor at Kobe's Academy. And I was doing the college workout. So I'm like, fuck it. So it's me, Chase, and Kobe. So I work him out for like 2 hours, right? He's fucking drenched in sweat. And it was fucking awesome, Doug. Like, simple as simple can be. He didn't say shit. Whatever I asked him to do, he did. And like, it was just basic. I stopped. I corrected. It was fucking amazing. 2 hours after, I'm like, KB. Well, I didn't call him KB by then. I was like, Kobe, we got camp tomorrow. Do you want me to come back? He goes, you can come back, but I ain't touching the ball. I'm doing 2 hours of defense. I was like, yeah, fuck yeah. He's full of shit. I said, all right, what are you doing? He goes, well, I'm working on rotations. I'm working on slides. I'm working on stance. I'm working on not leaving my feet on jump shooters. I'm working on contesting. And I'm doing this with a 30-pound weight vest on. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, that is some Jason Bourne shit. And I'm like, wow. He goes, well, I said, what are you doing the rest of the day? He goes, well, I'm going to work out. I'm going to work out with my weights. I'm going to eat. I'm going to cold tub, hot tub. I'm going to take a nap. I'm going to come back. I'm going to do yoga. I'm going to do martial arts. I'm going to nap it, play with the kids, come back, track work. And this was fucking like a month after the season ended, probably less. And I'm like, holy shit. Like, what the fuck? And that, but again, the first time I was going to work him out, he looked me up and down like every NBA player does, like, what the fuck are you going to do with me? Like, what the fuck? So it was great. So anyway,
that moment though, when you see what the real thing looks like, I actually told this to my son and a buddy the other day, where we used to say this in college. And I don't know if this is an expression that other people use. I remember we said it at Notre Dame.
Yep.
And then I used it. We're at Oklahoma State. So we were playing against Iverson. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a huge Iverson guy in terms of his skill. What he had was unbelievable speed and quickness. Some guys are fast. Some guys are quick. He was both.
Right.
But he, at one point in the game, he stole the ball and he waited. We had a 7-footer, Matt Gotch, who was a white kid, pogo stick, but a really good athlete. He waited up and dunked on. Huh. And I'll never forget. And I mean, it was so nasty. It was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
And I remember we were watching film the next day and dudes were like, you saw Jesus. That's what Jesus looks like. Right. That's what the real thing looks like.
Yeah.
And that's like that moment when you go, you've worked with NBA stars.
Yeah.
And then you work with a guy who's not only a superstar, but also has a completely next level mentality of everything it takes in order to be the greatest player ever. And you're like, that's what Jesus looks like. It's like, that if you want it, that's what it looks like.
I got a great Iverson story. So before, when Jim O'Brien was there with the Celtics, they're going conference final. They went to the conference finals. But like, so they, I wasn't working for the team, but Chris Wallace, they signed Omar Cook the last day of the year to get his rights for the summer. Jim O'Brien wanted nothing to do with Omar Cook. They were in a playoff run. He wanted nothing to do with him. This is like when Omar got drafted, like played for like six teams in the same year. And then like, you know, and then the Celtics had him. So he goes, Mike, work out Omar Cook every day. He goes, like, Jim O'Brien wants nothing to do with him. Come at like 3 o'clock, whatever. So I was sort of seeing a girl from that went to Temple. So I was like, after my last workout, I had all my Celtics gear on. They just eliminated fucking AI in the last round of the playoff, or the last, that last round. So I drive down. I stay at the Holiday Inn on City Line Avenue in Philly, like right outside of fucking Philly, right where St. Joe's is. I pull up, Doug, it's like 11 o'clock at night. There's like nine Hummers in this fucking Holiday Inn parking lot. I walk up, I'm about to check in. I get all my Celtics gear on. I look to my right and it's fucking Iverson, shit-faced, looking me up and down like he was going to stab me. Because I got, I'm the only fucking fat white dude in fucking Philly wearing all Celtic gear. This fucking guy just gets eliminated in a series and a half with fucking this Boston. And he's looking me up. He's got like, and he's going back, stumbling back. I guess they told me he had like the whole top floor, like bought out the whole year, like the whole top floor. And like, I'm going to fucking die tonight. And I was like laughing to myself, but not laughing to myself. I literally almost shit my pants. But anyways, that's my Iverson story.
So you can follow Mike at Hoop Consultants. Remember, you can also listen to the Doug Gottlieb Show daily, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 through Pacific. All right, so that's the end of part one. We got more to come. I mean, he's just an amazing storyteller, and I felt so compelled. We kept him on for 2.5 hours. So remember to download part two. Also, download, subscribe, review, write one, and rate us wherever you download podcasts. And thanks so much for listening. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball.
Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.